Welcome to Federal Insights, sponsored by Maximus. Here's today's moderator, Tom Temin.
Sometimes people forget that the General Services Administration, for all it does government-wide, is also an agency with its own operational needs. For how it handles cybersecurity through its Security Operations Center, I spoke with the GSA's Chief Information Security Officer, Bo Burles. Well, let's begin with the big picture. How does GSA handle its own cybersecurity after giving advice and products and vehicles to the rest of the government for the rest of the government's cybersecurity? You do have your own concerns and needs, and tell us the general approach and tell us about your Security Operations Center.
I think it's important to understand our operating principle or organizing principle first. We follow a one GSA, one cyber model. It's focused on achieving unified defense for all our information systems within the enterprise. We do not like silos. We're all integrated and must act as one. Visibility is something that we do not compromise on. It's required at the agency level versus at the system level. And what that means is every information system must report and integrate into the top line agency SOC, and deeply integrate with the corresponding set of cybersecurity tooling. This is something that is advanced as part of OMB M2209, the Federal Zero Trust Cybersecurity Strategy. SOC, our Security Operations Center, is just one part of that and is coupled together with a number of additional related services that we organize under what we call Enterprise Security Shared Services, or ES3. So in addition to SOC, we provide, for example, firewall as a service, DNS as a service, SCAN as a service, and we're developing newer capabilities like AppSec as a service as well. The integrated set of products, they're focused really on ensuring that enterprise visibility, because without visibility, there can be no orchestration, there can be no response. SOC teams can't be the man or woman behind a looking glass that can see but not that really cannot reach out and touch and effectuate change. So our SOC service is really delivered as a product versus more typical service delivery type models. And I'm often asked, what the heck does that mean? And what that essentially does, it puts a lot more onus and burden on teams like mine to hold us more accountable to our stakeholders, providing a whole lot more transparency via metrics and measures to track utility for overall effectiveness, and provide our stakeholders a say-so in how we shape our product downline, particularly relative to the overall product roadmap. And the core function therein around this product delivery is really ensuring that we actually have defined products that identify the how to integrate with our related product, and then the benefit and utility that that product provides over time. It's not staffed by government or contractor alone. We have a unified team. We function with product owners that are head of key products. And within the SOC space, we have a SOC product owner, a hunt product owner, an IR product owner, and a threat assessment product owner, with teams of both federal and contractors that are working together to effectively advance the mission of SOC services and cybersecurity more as a whole. Tom, we do not have a central physical presence.
Yeah, that was my question. Is there a place where you can walk through a set of double doors and you're in the SOC?
Yeah, I think that's the traditional model that you see in some places, and I think how they picture it on TV sometimes. But, you know, we don't actually have a physical location. We're pretty much everywhere, distributed all across the country, with tooling both on-prem and in our cloud environments, with our teams able to access all of it. The service is 24/7, including, you know, near real-time monitoring and response. Obviously, we scale down over the night hours, but we do have active teaming that is focused around monitoring and response should we have to go through and provide it. You know, the core objective for all of this is to really continuously enhance and deliver these services in a way that aligns to that product delivery model, that aligns to our zero trust vision, and really, you know, focused around ensuring that, you know, we're investing in technology that allows us to be able to go through and act more in unison, following a unified cyber defense model, really for the overall protection of the agency at large.
And you mentioned that the SOC people are not just people behind a pane of glass sending out information, but they're actively involved in cybersecurity. Maybe discuss who it is that has the authority to say, suspend a system operation when there's something dangerous that is perceived one way or another there? Is it only the system owner or the program owner that can say, yeah, you better take that offline? Or can the SOC do that? And how do those decisions get made?
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned that, because this has been an area that we've been trying to formalize more recently for ourselves, just basically trying to go through and define a framework with a rubric that has a corresponding decision framework, identifying exactly what decisions, actions, and analysts can independently take, what actions have to effectively flow up to the, you know, incident commander or the SOC product owner or our security operations director. And then likewise, things that have to go through and flow up to the DCISO, CISO, and authorizing official type individuals within the agency that have ultimate cybersecurity responsibility. And as you might imagine, lower level incidents are effectively empowered and entrusted to our teams to allow them to be able to take more quick, decisive action, particularly around low level incidents, to prevent them from matriculating to bigger incidents. But the overriding decisions around taking a system offline, those things always rise up to the CISO, and we do broad-based coordination with our executives within the agency before we take that action. The only exception is when there is a clear and imminent threat, and where, you know, we have to go through and on take a site offline, and coordination and the time that it takes to facilitate that coordination would result in a negative impact to the agency and the program at large, in which case those calls are made directly by me.
And sometimes those calls mean that you only need to have a few minutes offline. It doesn't mean that you've been attacked and you have to take it down to cleanse the system for a week or something. Fair enough to say?
Yeah. Teams regularly, you know, their first track is to go through and block the offending IPs that are initiating targeted attacks against federal systems. That's obviously the easy one. Those types of actions are routinely done in a blocking, you know, malware related files or low level service functions within a system that have little to no effect. Those types of actions are routinely done at a team specific level, including in many cases on an automated basis. Now, taking entire sites offline, those things typically require broader coordination. And within the agency, we have a formalized incident response program, including coordination, for example, with our legal teams, our comms teams, our privacy teams, our business executives, ensuring that those types of larger set decisions, you know, have that broad-based coordination within the agency.
Yeah, because if something were to, say, require the suspension of SAM, you know, then you would get not just the government, but all of industry wondering what the heck's going on. So there's some real stakes there. And in the SOC construct that you've described, which is more of a virtual thing than a physical thing, and also a multi-service type of operation, shared service type of operation, what are the biggest challenges you see right now in maintaining that so that it's effective?
You know, I will say the sheer fact that we've gone through and formalized the development and delivery of SOC via a product orientation, Tom, has fundamentally helped us to more easily communicate the benefits of SOC, particularly for systems programs and for the overall unified defense of the agency. You know, long are gone questions around what the heck is it? How do we integrate? What tools are involved? What's your responsibility versus my responsibility? And those things you want to effectively go through and address at the bat. So it's important to actually have a formalized capability versus having a SOC function. And those are very different things. But in terms of, you know, broader challenges, you know, I will say funding is always top of mind, budget. As you know, the Cybersecurity Executive Order of 2021, coupled with the varying set of memorandums, especially M2131, which enumerated a broad set of cybersecurity logging requirements across individualized systems, programs, agencies, et cetera, has resulted in a near 10x increase in our logging-related costs and our SOC-related costs. So that always is a pressure. We are working actively with partners across the agency, as well as with CISA, really focused around making sure that we're interpreting M2131 correctly, and then approaching it in a way that both achieves compliance, yes, but really focuses primarily around the, you know, ultimate goal of cyber resiliency. Broader challenges, you know, beyond budget and funding, always typically relate to adversary tactics, techniques corresponding to, you know, how they're operating and how they're reconning and attacking information systems. As you know, we live in an age of AI now, where recently in the press reports have talked about the first ever AI-related cyber attack. And so we are really focused around ensuring that we're using some of this newer technology and advancement of our own services that better allow us to stitch discrete events together, to correlate higher level events with higher levels of confidence, and orchestrate those events that have higher levels of confidence with automation to boot, such that, you know, while we might not necessarily be using AI to respond at AI speed, you know, we're more quickly being able to go through and correlate these events to facilitate faster and more rapid response.
And you mentioned there's a SOC product owner on that theme of products, an IR product owner, Hunt product owner, and threat assessment product owner. Do they all, the other three, IR, Hunt, and threat assessment, add up to the SOC, or are they, what's the architecture of that setup?
Yeah, they all work under the security operations division, under security operations director. And they're all fundamentally federal leads that are capable and experienced, skilled at their craft. And they're focused around developing that product offering. And that includes, you know, defining exactly what it is that we're doing, what the capabilities are, what the integration looks like, you know, what the, you know, measures and techniques are that we're going to be using to ensure that we are tracking effectiveness, tracking utility, you know, focused around product and what the evolution of that product is going to look like, coordination and communication with our stakeholders across the agency in terms of being able to go through and define that net benefit. You know, we're in an age in a way that, like probably 10 years ago, Tom, we probably would not be talking about developing and delivering these services as product, because we would just, you know, have a mandatory service that everybody integrates with. But I think those days are certainly behind us. And the challenge is that we have business teams across agencies, departments, as well as an industry that can effectively go through and do for themselves what they would typically have required an IT team and or a security team. So when you have a business function that needs to solve a business problem, they can go out and readily deploy a solution within a low-code, no-code type environment, in some cases even without security or IT. So being able to go through and express the strategic need for us to act as one has been really fundamental to one of the primary reasons why we feel as if we have to go through and tell that bigger story. Just because you can, it doesn't mean you should, because it comes at a harm to the detriment of the agency and our unified cybersecurity defense and our ability to be able to go through and really measure and sure, deliver cybersecurity in a way that everybody requires, particularly relative to the threat environment and what government cybersecurity policies require, particularly as it relates to M2209.
Bo Burles, Chief Information Security Officer at the General Services Administration. We'll return with more of the interview after the short break. I'm Tom Temin.
In today's federal government, security by design is key to achieving the highest levels of security compliance. From security consulting and architecture design to comprehensive managed services, Maximus delivers end-to-end protection of critical data, systems, and operations. We are a trusted cybersecurity partner, delivering cutting-edge solutions that enable government to securely operate in a digitally connected world, securing every aspect of your mission. Learn more at maximus.com/federal.
Welcome back to our interview with Bo Burles, Chief Information Security Officer at the General Services Administration. Our topic is security operations centers and best practices for running them. Let's talk about certifications, staff requirements, the human capital side of security operations center, whatever form it might take. Are certifications important to you? Do people have them? And maybe discuss the extent to which you think they matter.
You know, I think they do matter, but, you know, they're not everything. You know, as I mentioned earlier, we don't fully outsource our team, you know, our function rather. We do operate as an integrated team. You know, we have employees and contractors alike that are required to be cleared, both in terms of suitability, ensuring that they have necessary background investigations, as well as technical prowess, ensuring that they have certain levels of certifications. But ultimately speaking, I think we live in an age and, you know, where certification is important, but your ability, your tech ability is equally, if not more important. So we don't essentially go through and discount the fact that somebody lacks a certification. You know, we essentially go through and do deep dive interviews with our teams, ensuring that we're able to go through and really have them ask and answer, you know, very technical questions that you either know or you don't know. And a study, exam, prep type answer probably will not be able to cut. And I think that's where we really need to go through and focus based on more on skills than we do on certifications. But certifications are also important. They do essentially go through and speak to a certain level of commitment to your craft. And having one, I think, is a sign or indication of that. And it's certainly valued, but is not the driving factor.
And let's move on to contractors, because you mentioned earlier that it's not government or contractors, it's everyone operating as a team. But there are still limitations on what contractors can do, and you haven't totally outsourced this. So what is the relationship? How do you manage it? And how do you ensure that contractors are, you're getting the most out of them, but also the most out of the federal people? It sounds like a complicated thing to manage, actually.
You know, I will say that our product delivery model is key. It ensures a formal product delivery with a defined service offering, product documentation, integration model. Again, those metrics and measures to track utility and effectiveness. And then that focus on product, ensuring that we always have an eye on what's next, the needs of our team and the needs of our customers. And that product is essentially delivered with supporting, you know, playbooks and ConOps that essentially ensures that new team members coming into the team, that they understand and they can readily pick up and figure things out. We team them with existing staff, be it federal or contractor, to ensure that they're actively getting their feet wet, you know, with their hands held along the way. But we do essentially rely on our contractors to manage their transitions with GSA government oversight. And our contractors are expected to not let monitoring or response activities be diminished as they effectively integrate new team members into our teams. You know, GSA plays, you know, a leading role in the selection of our tooling. You know, we conduct, you know, broad-based analyses of alternatives and pilots with our contractors and agency stakeholders. But ultimately speaking, you know, decisioning, particularly around product delivery, the how-to, that is all essentially done at a government-wide level.
Yeah, I wanted to ask about the tooling, because sometimes contractors want to have what they might feel are best in class. The agency needs to have some control over that. So is your use of contractors mainly, I guess it's not a great delicate word, but body shop, as opposed to them bringing also the tooling?
Yeah, tooling is always defined at the program level, you know, by leadership, by my directors. Challenges corresponding to the flavor of the day tools presses and creates all kinds of challenges, because they're tied to a given contractor with unique competencies or background in a given tool set. You know, we're really thinking more strategically. What I mean by that is, you know, we provide a shared service to the GSA, and GSA provides a shared service to the rest of the government. And, you know, I'm focused on making sure that we're effectively integrated and working very closely with CISA. Any product service capability that CISA has, I'll be first in line to effectively leverage. Today, we leverage their cloud log aggregation capability, or CLAW, their PDNS service, their PAC solution. We're actively doing an AOA to be able to go through and integrate with that. So I think we have to think beyond the wants and needs of individualized contractors to really thinking more strategically about the needs of the agency and, dare I say, the needs of us as a nation and what we have to do in mounting an effective cyber defense, particularly given the set of threats that we have. You know, we do not operate in silos onto ourselves anymore. Each agency is wedded to every other agency.
And with respect to tools, part of the purpose of tools is to generate information and data, whether it's logging or whatever the case might be, the whole set of tooling needed to get a visibility into the cyber picture. And what are the good strategies that you have to ensure that the data is filtered or processed in such a way that people aren't inundated with false positives, et cetera, so that people can do what they do best is react and figure out a strategy for when something happens that they need to deal with.
First and foremost, Tom, I think, you know, we're focuses on data collection. Like, you know, you can't compromise on visibility. Anything and everything that has a pulse across our network, we need to be able to collect. And once you have that data, you don't want to effectively be a money pit, right? You have to do something with it. And that essentially comes down to having engineers that are constantly focused on creating high fidelity alerts and providing our SOC analysts with really as much as information as possible with that alert. Focus on minimizing repetitive processes, such as, you know, manually copying a file, for example, into a tool to conduct research. That might seem fairly benign, but it takes time. And, you know, so setting up and investing in automation as much as possible is essential. That includes the use of AI, ML, and correlation logic. You know, you always want the raw log data to support the response activities, but you want your tooling and automation to give you the best quality pointers to potential threat activity. Our focus over the last set of years has really been central collection, invest as much as possible in automating those events such that individualized events by themselves might be benign, but once you effectively stitch them together, they tell a different story. And so the focus is around telling that story and corresponding that story to specific attack techniques or attack frameworks that exist, such that we can start to go through and provide those higher fidelity alerts that provide confidence and then facilitate an orchestrated change. And whether that's a block a site, block an executable, alert a user to be able to go through and take further positive action with a human eye on it, those are the things that we have to fundamentally do to be able to go through and make sure that we're just not swimming in a sea of information that is inundating our ability to facilitate that response that is so much needed.
Bo Burles, Chief Information Security Officer at the General Services Administration. To hear this interview again or share it with colleagues, please visit federalnewsnetwork.com and search Insights. I'm Tom Temin.
Thank you for listening to Federal Insights, sponsored by Maximus on Federal News Network.
In today's federal government, security by design is key to achieving the highest levels of security compliance. From security consulting and architecture design to comprehensive managed services, Maximus delivers end-to-end protection of critical data, systems, and operations. We are a trusted cybersecurity partner, delivering cutting-edge solutions that enable government to securely operate in a digitally connected world, securing every aspect of your mission. Learn more at maximus.com/federal.
Hi, I'm Mike Richmond of the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. Veterans deserve world-class health care. You can help by joining VA's Million Veteran Program. MVP, the largest research program of its kind, helps VA better understand how genes affect health and is now beyond 1 million participants, a historic milestone. Some of the largest studies ever have been done in MVP, with discoveries in PTSD, depression, heart disease, cancer, and more. With your help, we can make key breakthroughs in areas that matter most to veterans. Go to mvp.va.gov to sign up or call 866-441-6075 to schedule an appointment at a participating VA. You don't have to receive your care at VA to join. I'm Mike Richmond.